This week's episode is brought to you by City Center Gallery and Books, located at 112 Hay Street in historic downtown Fayetteville. To learn more about downtown Fayetteville's only bookstore, go to citycentergallery.com.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all know me, back where the girls.
This is the North Carolina Theater Story Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. We're coming to you from a 100-year-old house, former home of the Gilbert Theater, here in historic Haymont in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is show number 10. Our guest today is John Dornier. John is a native New Yorker. He has two NYU degrees, including a BFA and an MA in theater education. For 10 years, he taught drama at the Fairmont High School in Fairmont, North Carolina. Currently, he is in Channing Young Theater Students at Reed Ross Classical School. Since 2006, John has been a part-time instructor at Fayetteville Tech Community College. John, welcome!
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be here.
Well, it's a thrill to have you. John, we were just listening to this wonderful Cole Porter song, Longing to Be on Old Broadway.
I love Cole Porter.
Well, don't we all? And this one is an early one, probably written in the teens. Mm-hmm. And we were listening to it, and I know that you're a native New Yorker, but if you could go back there and do anything you would like on Broadway, act, direct, have a play produced, what would you do?
If I could do anything on Broadway, what I think of immediately is one of the best performances I've ever seen, and that was seeing Richard Burton do Equus on Broadway.
Oh my!
And and what I would like to do is go back and do Equus and play that role that he played. But the experience I had was just amazing. We were college students at the time, and I remember tickets to see Richard Burton in his limited run was $5.
Oh,
and we sat on stage. They had semicircular seats for students only on stage. It was like bleacher seating.
Yes.
And the play took place
in
front of us.
My God.
And I was as close to Mr. Burton as 6 or 8 feet at times. And seeing him do the play, which I had seen before with other actors, was just one of the best theater experiences I've ever had. And I would love to, not try and recreate Mr. Burton's performance, but I would love to do the play. I think it's a terrific play.
I see. Well, what a memory. Thanks for sharing that. Now, John, I know, we all know what a fine actor you are, but now we're about to find out how good you are at improv. You see before you a red box.
I do indeed.
And in a moment, you're going to take that box and open it. And you're going to reach in there and take out whatever it is, and describe it to our radio audience very briefly. And then you're going to make up a story, either true or false, or a combination. Are you ready?
I am.
All right. Open that box.
Here I go. Lo and behold, what I have before me is a deck of cards. Innocent little pasteboards. And this particular deck of cards, you may be interested in knowing, Mr. Pryor, is the very deck of cards that was used in the last game of poker Wild Bill Hickok ever played.
Oh, my God.
Are you aware of the hand that Mr. Hickok was holding in his very last deck of play?
Before he was shot.
Yes, indeed.
No, I'm not aware.
Every poker player knows that the bad luck hand that Mr. Hickok was holding was aces and eights.
How many of each?
Well, there's some minor debate about that. Most people believe it was two of each. Some people will tell you three. There's no way we can confirm. Wild Bill would never, ever sit with his back to a door.
Mm-hmm.
He always sat with his back to the wall so he could see everyone coming. Such was his reputation. He had to have careful attendance records. And for the first and only time he sat with his back to the door, it was the last game he ever played. And this deck of cards, these aces and eights that he was holding,
very
the wonderful. Very ones that old Wild Bill had.
Oh my goodness. Well, well, well. Well, it's too bad he didn't follow his
Dead man's hand.
I said aces and eights. Well, I remember holding that hand. You're a great poker player, aren't you?
Well, I'm not a great player.
Well, I mean, you play it frequently. Well,
I bet a dime or two here and there.
I see. Now, John, we just read your introduction, and we know that you are teaching at Reed Ross Classical School.
Yes,
indeed. Can you tell us what the program is like there? You've been there just a year and a half?
Actually, this is my third year.
Oh, third. So what did you find, and what have you changed?
Well, I think it's honestly the best teaching job I've ever had. Reed Ross Classical is a terrific school. As you said, I taught for 10 years at a high school and came to Reed Ross, and Reed Ross is a middle school and a high school. So I now have grades 6 through 12. And we're a year-round school, so it usually works out that I have high schoolers half the year and middle schoolers half the year. The first year I was there, I had a combination of both. And as you mentioned, I also teach at Fayetteville Tech. So on any given day for the week, I was teaching 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, and college students. I would leave Reed Ross at 4 o'clock, and I would go to Fayetteville Tech to teach my 5 o'clock class. So I had the entire gamut. Now it's a little calmer. It's a little more sedate. I just have high schoolers, and Fayetteville Tech doesn't kick in until August, so I'm only working one job.
I see.
Which suits my health.
So what the program that you have, you're happy with it?
Very much so. I love having the middle schoolers because the middle schoolers are the ones that will be the high schoolers before too long.
Sure.
So instead of getting high schoolers that have no theater experience and no theater class experience, I now have kids that are familiar with me. The seventh graders wave to me in the hall from time to time. And they tell me they can't wait to take my class.
Oh, good.
So that's very rewarding.
Yes.
And we have a very supportive staff and administration. Mr. Hatch, Tom Hatch, is the principal there. He's a great guy and a terrific principal. I have a classroom, and right next to my classroom is a courtyard, an outdoor courtyard. So very often, when the weather permits, I bring my kids out in the courtyard. That gives me like an enormous bullpen for them to rehearse in or to work in groups or do scenes or whatever I might ask them to do, some theater game or theater activity. Uh-huh. They get to run around a little bit. We have a large stage in a gymnasium, which some people call the gymnatorium. So we do have a stage. Usually when I do work productions with my kids, I'll take them into the media center, the library, because it's a little more intimate.
Yes.
The stage and the gym, this huge basketball floor, don't make for very good acoustics.
Oh, yes.
So I try and keep the kids in a little more controlled environment. And we have, most of my classes are an amalgamation of 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th graders. Some of them might be Theater 4 students. Some of them might be Theater 3 students. Some of them might be Theater 2. Some of them might be 1. So I have to sort of differentiate the instruction for them.
So what do you offer in 1, and then how do you move, what do you move to?
Well, I like to start my kids off in Theater 1 with basic theater skills. So we'll do, We just started up for the second half of the year with my high schoolers now, and the first thing they're doing are tableaus. I have them create frozen images.
Oh,
and I might give them a word like funeral and have a group of 5 kids show me a tableau of a funeral. I might say religion and have them show me a group show me a tableau, a frozen image of religion, and then go to different things. As they get adept at doing those, then I might say to them, let me see a problem that exists here at Reed Ross. Mm-hmm. Show me a tableau. And invariably there'll be a tableau about bullying or inappropriate cell phone usage or some, whatever problem they might be, a real problem.
Yeah.
And then I'll tell them, show me a tableau that represents the solution to that problem.
Oh my goodness.
And when they do, then we talk about, okay, now how do you get from one to the other?
Yes.
So this is what I think of as conflict resolution through drama. It's a way of using drama for real life problems in a safe environment. If you're confronted by a bully somewhere in the schoolyard, that's not very safe.
Yes.
But if we're constructing the problem in the classroom for the purposes of solving it, then we end up having a conversation about it instead of a fight about it.
I see. So it's acting all four of these groups.
Right. So we'll do tableau. That would be my beginning because it doesn't involve talking and it doesn't involve moving. It's just frozen images. And from there, we'll go to pantomime, which is the silent theater. And I might say, create a tableau. And then when I say three, bring it to life. So the tableau becomes a pantomime.
I see.
And now the kids have experience in expressing emotion and expressing ideas, conveying ideas, and movement. And from there, I might move to, like with the more advanced students, I might move to monologues or scenes, if they're theater three or four, or improvisation, right? Now that you've created this tableau that's begun to move, now add dialogue. So that way the kids that don't have any experience have a very kind of user-friendly way of breaking into the performance. I get kids that have never performed, never done any kind of public speaking in their lives.
Yes.
And they're very intimidated about getting up in front of the room. And I want to allay those fears. I want them to abate their theater, stage fright.
Yes.
And I also get kids that have a great deal of fun doing this, and I have to drag them off the stage. I can't, you know, and I have everything in between, which is what I mean by differentiating experiences. And you just have to sort of create a safe environment where kids can be creative.
So then you move into plays.
Yes, yes. Generally, I do with a theater club. I have auditions that are open to the whole school, not just my students. And we'll do what I call a showcase and a full-length play with the middle school, and a showcase and a full-length play with the high school. The showcase would be an amalgamation of scenes and monologues for the beginning students, and then a full-length play. I'm in the process of deciding what I want to do this time. The last production we did with the high school was a play called Dead Man's Cell Phone. And we did a Alice in Wonderland play, a musical. I had my middle schoolers singing to recorded music in an Alice in Wonderland play. So.
Well, what a wonderful program, John. I'm so impressed. That's just marvelous. Now let's move into that next entity known as Community College. You just directed a marvelous play there called The Water Engine by David Mamet.
Indeed.
And it was one of the really outstanding. I see many fine plays. This is certainly one of the top five I've seen in the last year. And can you tell us, how did that happen? How did you find the play, first of all? The play, first of all, you know, the play is a thing, as Shakespeare said. Mm-hmm. You have to have all the magic and talent of the world, unless the play's right, it won't work. Mm-hmm. How did you find that play?
Well, I got to tell you first, Lynn, I can't take credit for directing it entirely. My wife and I.
Ah.
My wife is Patty Cucho, who you know, and she co-directed it with me. And this was a play that she and I had wanted to do 30 years ago. When we were living in New York and we were young actors. We came across the play when it was relatively new. And we wanted to do it. And as you know, the first thing you have to do is secure the rights before you can start performing.
Yeah.
And we sent to Samuel French, and they sent us a letter back saying that the play was not available to do. My wife wrote a heartfelt letter directly to David Mamet asking him to do the play. We had a number of people that we had worked with before that we felt were just right for this play.
Mm-hmm.
That we wanted to cast, and the idea that the author expresses in the play is that this is, as you know, because you've seen it, this is a play that takes place in a radio station. And it's a radio play that's being performed. And the actors step out of the radio reality into a conventional theater reality. So Mr. Mamet has said that using the radio play reality as well as the conventional theater reality creates a third reality. And that was what we were interested in, trying to develop that elusive third reality. And 30 years ago, Mr. Mamet wasn't releasing the rights. And this past fall, when Mr. Johnson, the head of the Fine Arts Department at FTCC, started asking me about what plays we would do, I had an opportunity to direct one play during the summer. And I wanted to do Sly Fox, the Larry Gelbart play. And I remember I'd gotten a copy of Sly Fox, and I started reading it, and about three pages in, something snapped, and I said to myself, I want to do The Water Engine. I don't know how many more plays I'm going to get to do, and this is one that's been in the back of my head for 30 years. So I called Mr. Johnson, and I said, I know we had talked about doing a comedy, but what I'd really like to do is this old chestnut from David Mamet.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's early Mamet. It's not his best, I think, but it's a really interesting piece.
Yeah.
And a week later, we had the rights, so we went from there.
Well, wonderful. Then you had such a strong cast. Some of my favorite actors in the whole county.
I could not have asked for a better cast. And you know as well as I that when you audition a play in regional theater or community theater, you don't always get what you want, you get what you get.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, I got what I wanted. We had a number of people, friends that I've worked with before, the kind of people that would sit around the dinner table with us, and we'd say, gee, we'd love to have a play that we could do together. Wouldn't it be great if we could all so-and-so and so-and-so do a play together? Yeah. And about five or six of them were available. And when we started talking up The Water Engine, they got interested. And I held auditions and got a couple of very fine actors. And we took it from there. And it turned out to be one of my favorite plays that I've ever directed.
Well, I'm
co-directed.
I'm not surprised to hear you say that. I loved it. Well, thank you for that, John. Now, we always have a sonnet or a monologue at this point in our show. And you've chosen a sonnet, number 24?
Number 30.
Number 30.
I think you've heard this one before.
All right.
This is a sonnet about friendship and how friends make us feel.
Mm-hmm.
And how the loss of friends make us feel.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to try and do this without a cue card. When to the sessions of sweet silent thought I summon up remembrance of things past, I sigh the lack of many things I sought, and with old woes new wail my dear time's waste. Then can I drown an eye unused to shed for precious friends hid in death's dateless night, and weep afresh love's long since cancelled woe, and moan the expense of many a vanished night. Then can I grieve of grievances foregone, and heavily from woe to woe tell o'er the sad account of four bemoaned moan, which I knew pay as if not paid before. But if the while I think of thee, dear friend, all losses are restored and sorrows end.
Oh, my goodness. Beautiful. Oh, John, thank you. Well, that's where Proust got the title for his book, right? Remembrance of Things Past.
Indeed.
Well, you know, we're sitting here just immersed in talk of good theater. But even so, I feel I need to send a prayer up to St. Genesius, as I do every week. Asking for his or her guidance, whoever it is. And I'm going to do that right now. Dear St. Genesius, help us in our drama of life. Guide and inspire me that through the beauty of the drama and through the power of acting, we may elevate the thoughts and feelings of those who love or watch it. Dear St. Genesius, we are your humble followers.
Amen.
Thank you. Now it's time for our quiz.
This is where my credentials betray me, right?
All right, now we are going to. We have a quiz every week, and some do better than others. But I have a feeling you're going to do very well. And if you are successful with most of these questions, I'm going to give you your prize.
So I just have to get one right. Is
that well, I'm keeping this, I'm keeping the secret of the number of correct answers a just in my own. For only me to know. The book you're going to be given, is called The Lodger. It's about, the year is 1612. Shakespeare has become a lodger. This is a true, this part is true, on Silver Street in London. And he's living there for some weeks. And he is there, one of the reasons he's there, he has to help the give a deposition. Have something to do with a legal problem with this landlord. And it's the only time that we have Shakespeare's work. He spoke at this deposition, and his words were recorded. This is the only time we have his actual words as a person, not as a dramatist.
And I believe his signature as well.
And his signature. He didn't complete. He wrote William and then Shakes. Evidently just dashed it off. Anyway, this tells that story, and this book is yours if you are successful.
Go easy on me.
All right, now what we do is I'm going to give you the title of a play, and you are to give me the decade in which it premiered.
This from someone who doesn't even remember what he had for breakfast. I'm supposed to remember decades.
Well... All right, I'm sure, but I think you're going to do better than you think. Death of a Salesman.
40s.
The 40s. Waiting for Lefty.
30s.
Raisin in the Sun.
50s.
Whoa, isn't he doing well, see? The Iceman Cometh.
40s.
Buzz. Wrong. It was 1939. You were very close.
Complimented him.
But I'm sorry, we have to be strict about this. Come Back, Little Sheba.
50s.
Good. Pygmalion. The Shavian play.
30s? I was going to say 40s.
But no, it was in teens. 1913.
Yeah. Shaw lived 100 years.
Yes, he was 96, I believe. Private Lives.
30s.
Miss Julie. Now we go to another century.
Oh, you're talking 19th century now. Mr. Strindberg. That would be 1840s?
No, much later. I'm sorry. 1889. Okay, Bus Stop.
50s.
Good. Virginia Woolf. Who is Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Also 50s?
No. 62. The Man Who Came to Dinner.
Yikes. 30s?
Ah, Wilderness. Dean O'Neill, his only comedy.
That would be the 40s.
Good. Our Town.
30s.
All right, very good. All right, James, how many did you get right?
Well, he got 9
out of the 13.
13.
Unfortunately, you had to get 10 right.
Really?
To get the book.
Wow, that seems unfair. That's
why
arbitrary.
Arbitrary. Oh, for heaven's sakes, here it is.
Okay.
I will read this and I'll write a book report on it for you.
Good.
To make up for that one extra. And I was only a year off. I said 40s and you was 30.
Only a year off, true. How true. Now, this is a portion of our show when we talk about superstitions in the theater. And John, is there a superstition that you could share with us?
Well, I'm not a terribly superstitious person myself, but the biggest superstition I know of in the theater is the superstition about Shakespeare's Macbeth. No one is in the rehearsal period in the theater expected to utter the name of the Scottish tragedy. And I didn't think this was very serious, but it was demonstrated to me in a rehearsal once when somebody did the unspeakable and said the word, said the title in a dressing room.
And that
there was
happened.
A great everybody absolutely stopped. There was maybe 8 or 9 people in the room, and everybody stopped and looked right at this one person.
And, was that person James Dean?
No, it wasn't. This was in New York.
Okay.
There was a penance to be done.
And what it is, one of the ones I know is you go outside, everybody goes outside, and you turn around 3 times and whistle your Yankee Doodle. I think I have that right.
What happened in my experience was that the culprit, the one who mentioned the name, had to go outside. And turn around 3 times
just
and apologize 3 times.
I see.
And then had to ask to be allowed to enter.
Back.
And everybody, there was a consensus. We let him in, and everybody
I
said
see.
Yes.
Well, that's probably the real,
well,
the real story.
That's what happened. I'm sure different theaters handle it different ways.
And then the beatings began.
But here's another.
It was a blanket party. Yeah.
Here's a new one for me. That it's a superstition that if it's allowed to happen, bad things can happen. And that is, in rehearsal time, when whoever has the last line of the play, you're not supposed to say that line. You have, you know, say you have 3 or 4 lines to get. You give them all except the last one. Then that's through the entire rehearsal time. Now we have someone here sitting with us right now, Grant Paris, who is good. We'll get to you in just a minute. But Grant, you might take that back to rehearsal tonight,
yeah.
And say, and so far, bad things have happened. Well, we've lost one actor to something New York generated. But nevertheless, we can't be too careful, is my advice on this. And so you might want to introduce that tonight at rehearsal. If you're rehearsing, these folks, we're going to talk about this at length, but it's a festival of one acts at the Gilbert, and they're rehearsing 2 or 3 at a time, and there's 6 plays total. We're going to talk about this a lot, but nevertheless, you might want to take that back. Another superstition, not so much, well, it's a good luck charm, is to sew a lucky penny into your costume. This would be individuals doing this, you know, just quietly taking a lucky penny, sewing it in, perhaps yourself.
That's a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
That sounds like something a psychopath would do. That's just like extreme.
Well, those are 3 of our things, superstitions or whatever, for this week. Now, we're going to be talking about, we're going to be sharing our book sharing in a minute, but the book that I shared recently was Judy Dench's autobiography called And Furthermore. She had an earlier book out. When someone said, let's do another one, she agreed. She said, I have the title for it. You know, And Furthermore, she's saying. She has more to say. But she has some wonderful advice to actors in the last chapter of her book. And one of the most, it's the most frequently asked questions that she gets. And one of them is, how do you memorize lines? And she said, well, I don't have much trouble with that through the years. And she said, what is far more difficult, and this is what she said, the real difficulty is working out why the character says the line and what is going on between the lines, which is often more important than the line itself.
That's very true,
so,
I think.
Yeah, well, yeah, the meaning, the you know, what's beneath the line? Why is the person saying it?
And I know my students are always concerned with memorization. You know, I don't want to do that monologue. It's way too long, you know. And they're always, how am I going to memorize this? How am I going to memorize this? And I tell them that memorization is your homework. You don't memorize at rehearsal. You come in and you rehearse. Go home and memorize.
Well, that is, and Grant is agreeing, and you just, so that's at high school level, for that to be, you know, made clear to these actors that are going to move on into other kinds of community theater or whatever. Now, you had a book to share.
Actually, you got me thinking about advice, and I can think of 2 books.
All right.
That I'd like to mention back. None of them are recent. One is called Method or Madness by Robert Louis Taylor, one of the founders of the group theater. And he talks about what in his generation the method acting was about, and sort of takes the mystery out of it. And it's a very readable, very accessible book. And the other one for acting, for young actors, is by a man who was a colleague of Stanislavski. His name was Boleslavski. And his book is Acting the First Six Lessons. And it's not as readable as the Robert Taylor book.
Uh-huh.
It's done, the Six Lessons book is done as a conversation between the acting teacher and a young female student. And it's kind of, because it was written when it was written in the 20s, it's kind of condescending and misogynistic, and he refers to the young student as the creature. And it's a dialogue, and the young girl asks questions, and the master answers them.
Yeah.
And if you can get by that, the questions are all still very valid, and the answers are very solid.
Yes.
And it too, if you're interested in the Stanislavski system, and most of my students, most of my college students are, that's the book I like to recommend.
Oh, wonderful, John.
Wonderful.
Thank you for that. Now we're moving on to mailbox. A mailbox, we have letters, we're opening the mailbox here. I have several letters this week urging me to invite Anthony Morrison back. He was our guest last week, and we both shared a birthday last week and had a cake here, and we had a wonderful time. I do plan to bring him back. But goodness, so many of our past guests are getting fan mail, James. It's just great. But I am being criticized for giving James Johnson a bad time. Well, I'm sorry.
Finally.
I'm sorry. I'll stop when... James, stop eating that eclair. Put that eclair down. I'm going to call your mother.
Okay.
This is what I'm putting up with.
Did you bring enough eclairs for everybody, James?
No, that's the worst thing. He is not doing that. And right in the middle of these letters, I'm being criticized for it, but I have to keep the quality of the show at a certain level, John.
I'm behind you, man. I got you back.
Well, thank you.
I'm going to take that eclair from
you. Now you see me picking up my stopwatch. Huh? I'm going to give you 60 seconds to how would you change theater in Cumberland County in 60 seconds. Are you ready?
I think so. The first thing I would do is add about half a dozen theaters. I think there should be more venues in Cumberland County. I think that Fayetteville doesn't exactly have a dearth of theaters, but I think Fayetteville is well represented, but I think the county itself, not so much. And I would like to see venues for young people where they could get some experience in theater, where they could see theater. Because so many of my students come to me and they've only seen one play in their lives, if that many. And I know that theater reaches people in a place to no one else, no other venue, no other medium reaches. I remember plays I've seen when I was a kid. I don't remember the movies I saw last week. The theater reaches you in a different way and stays with you. So if there were a few more places where people could see theater, accessible to them, then they would be less hesitant to take me.
Good. Wow, 62 seconds. Absolutely marvelous. Well, the Gilbert does its part.
Indeed.
Goodness knows, we have offered, I think it's about 120 plays, but with the festival, we're going to add up six very, very quickly. All right, thank you for that. Well, we have some birthdays, some celebrated birthdays this week. David Belasco, you have to be a native New Yorker to know that name.
I do.
He was born on this day in 1853. Helen Mirren has a birthday today. She is 70.
My goodness.
This week.
And still working hard.
And still working. What a career she's had. Jason Robards, Jr., born on this day in 1922. Maureen McGovern, this day in 1949. Any other birthdays that I need to know about? I guess not.
I'll take cake. I'll say it's my birthday if I get more carrot cake.
More cake. Well, unfortunately, there's no carrot cake this week, James. And you can just stop bringing eclairs if you would.
This is my birthday eclair.
Well, I didn't know that. Otherwise, if I'd known that, I wouldn't have said anything. Now it's time for call board. And we have two theaters, that are going to be presenting shows this very week. One of them is the Sweet Tea Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. They're continuing with their second weekend of The Tempest at their most frequent venue, the Poe House. Grant, there's a history museum up here, museum itself, and then right next door is a house that the state bought. It's called the Poe House. It was built at the turn of the 20th century.
Can I tell the story about that? It's the funniest thing in the world.
All right.
Okay, so this house is an incredibly old house that was owned by one Edgar Allan Poe. And people come from miles away to see this home, entirely unaware that it is not that Edgar Allan Poe.
It is that it was his parents played a very cruel joke on him, their son, naming him Edgar Allan. Nevertheless, it's at this beautiful house in the backyard, in the Poe House garden. And it's this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
It runs till July 26th. And it is at the Poe House's address is 1897 Poe House. That's the name of the place is the 1897 Poe House. The address is 801 Arsenal Avenue.
And, just a stone throw from this venue, from the Gilbert home. And is there a matinee, or they're all evening?
It looks like they are nightly. Which is good, because of this heat, you don't want to be in an outdoor.
Absolutely right. So I know I'll be there this weekend, I hope.
Bring your own chair, you know.
And you bring your own chair. Well, but then that other company, what is it? Oh, yes, the Gilbert.
One of those theaters in town.
One of those Gilbert theaters. One of those kind, they call the Gilbert Theater. And I've asked Grant to bring himself here, just to talk about this play, because he has final rehearsal tonight, and here he is, and this is so gracious of him, and we're going to give you a ride back down there.
That's right.
After you're finished pitching this. Yeah. What can you tell us about this?
Well, it's going to be a theater festival consisting of a plethora of one acts that are sort of ranging in size, scope, and length. Some of them are as short as 15 minutes. Some of them are about an hour and 10. But all of them are in the spectrum of being one acts. You know, they're not two act plays with intermissions. They're all, you know, single act structure. And there's a group of us that have come down from New York who are friends with Robin. We met her last summer on an intensive retreat. And we're joining forces with the local Fayetteville artists, and we're putting this thing up, and it's an adventure.
Well, it's very exciting, and you are, like, the opening is tomorrow night.
Yes.
And there are three of those six plays tomorrow night.
Yes, sir.
And then the following day at the matinee.
The matinee and an evening, performance.
So, but you buy one ticket for $16, I understand, yes, with some discounts depending on whatever. And then you can come again and again and again.
The whole week.
And the whole week. And by Sunday matinee and night.
Yes.
The 26th, you can have seen all six of them.
All of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're all really spectacular plays that are different. You know, that, and I know that's such a generic word to say different, but
surely.
they really are. Fascinating, all of them. I find that all of them really have are rooted in a heart that I don't think that you always get to see in contemporary theater now.
Uh-huh.
And they all have a real sense of mysticism about them that I find pretty fascinating in theater.
Well, Grant, I'm thrilled about this. I can't wait. And Grant, I want to tell our audience something about you. He's an actor and director and playwright. He's from Brooklyn, New York. He works part-time with the production
literary
departments at the Labyrinth Theater Company in Manhattan.
Yes, sir.
Well, it's just been wonderful having you here around at our table for our podcast, Grant. And we're going to see a lot of you. Of course, he's living downstairs he's sleeping
You've already been seeing a lot of that.
He's sleeping on the original Gilbert stage.
Stage.
And I hope the Gilbert ghost, just when I thought the Gilbert ghost had left the premises,
I should
have. And had gone down to the new theater, because there had been many sightings of the Gilbert ghost down there. But the other night when I was insomnia, I was up at 2 or 3 in the morning, and in the office, when I heard a noise, perhaps I shouldn't be telling you this. You might be frightened.
Well, it's interesting you say this, because Diogo the other night, he woke me up and he thought there was a ghost downstairs.
Well, it's a friendly ghost. I think I'm no longer joking about it, because I got up from my chair in the office watching nocturnal television, went over to this door leading to the old theater, and we have a chain lock on it. And Bob always puts the chain up. At 2 in the morning, the chain had been put down, and the chain was still moving.
Where do you have
Coltergeist.
Me stay?
Guys.
And so, the Gilbert ghost, and then we are seeing it downstairs. Well, but it is a supportive ghost, and I think that our prayers to St. Genesius are not a minute too soon. Anyway, right now, if you want to go back into the Gilbert Garden and find Bob, he's going to drive you down
to rehearsal.
All right. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me, Len.
And we'll see you soon.
All right. Come see the show.
All right. Go through the back door here. Well, our time is about up, John.
So soon.
I want to thank you for coming.
It's been a real pleasure. I really thank you for having me.
You're an absolute delight. I've known that for years. And to confirm that. So this is Lynn Pryor asking James to dim the lights and go to black while I urge you all to find a play to see this week. So until next Thursday, thank you for your company. Now, John, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you know what the universal question is?
The universal question?
Yes.
Goodness me, no, I don't.
Well, fortunately, I do know the answer to that.
And?
But I'm not going to share it tonight.
Aww.
It's going to be shared sometime in the future. I'll give fair warning about when I'm going to give the answer.
Will you invite me back next time?
All right, absolutely. So it could be some months from now, but it's going to be a just wonderful for mankind in general that I have in my mind the answer to that question.
Well, don't make it too long. I might not be here.
I'm going to, that titillation, I'm going to say, I'm going to give the answer, but it's going to be a while.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round, to be back where the boys are.